You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Hi, welcome to Nick Luck Daily. It is Tuesday the 2nd of April. Tom Stanley in for Nick. We've got plenty to get through. We will have a bit more Dubai World Cup fallout with the winning trainer, Bhupat Simar, of the winner Laurel River. We'll be turning a time for my to that as well with Dan Barber. We've got the regular Tuesday segment with our friends at Weatherby's and plenty more besides. But we should start with the highlight yesterday domestically. That was the Irish Grand National at Fairy House. It was won by Intense Raffles, trained by Tom Gibney, who joins me on the line now. What a start to his life this horse has made with you, Tom. Huge congratulations. How are you feeling this morning?
Thanks very much, Tom. Gosh, look at it, we're feeling good. We're feeling good. It's just, you know, it's worked out just like we hoped it would. It doesn't a lot of the time, so when it does, it always feels good.
Well, it was the 13th of January, the novice success at Fairy House. Was that the, were all roads already leading back from the Irish National at that point?
Not quite. It did kind of fall into place nicely to lead us to there. I'd had the horse since about October. He was supposed to run in Haydock in December. We were there at Haydock. Myself and a friend of mine, and it was frozen solid. That got called off, came back. The travelling took a lot out of him, so I had to back off him a bit after that and give him a chance to recover from it. Therefore, that Fairy House race then, which was very suitable, we decided to wait for that then, which we did. And that went so well, it kind of led us to the next step, which was back to Fairy House for an almost identical race, just a little bit higher rating band, over a little bit further. And we went there with the thoughts of, if this went according to plan, the Irish National would have been high on the agenda. We thought it would leave us kind of where we might scrape in. But it is kind of that didn't go just as we thought it would. It ended up the other end of the scale. Like, we would never have guessed we'd have ended up near the top of the handicap, never mind only getting into it.
Yeah, I mean, off the same weight as a horse like Any Second Now, who you know you've ended up just touching off in the end. In a, I mean, reflect on the performance, and the whole way around, did it sort of go completely to plan? You know, he was never too far away. He was when he picked it up three out, did you think this has gone like the dream?
Pretty much, Tom. It was very comfortable viewing. It pretty much went exactly to script. It made it all the easier to watch. It was great.
What's next? I know that's the thing that people always ask, but Do you start making a plan back from next season now?
We haven't yet, anyway. I spoke to Anthony after the race, and Anthony Romley, and we touched on Punchestown, which, again, I had already thought, if the Irish National went very much according to plan, and he came out of the race really well. There's a really good break from now to Punchestown, so we might think about going there for maybe one of the graded novice races or something like that.
So that's the thing. He's a novice. So I guess that's the logical step, right? He's an Irish Grand National winner, but you run in a staying Grade One novice. If you're going to have another start this season, that's the obvious thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it looks like at the moment, anyway. Yeah.
Just getting a sort of, if we can get ahead of ourselves and just look at next season, do you think this horse has the potential to cut it with the best of the staying chasers around?
I don't know, Tom. You know, like on what I've seen so far and the improvement he's made and the way he's going, we would have to think so. We believe that anyway until he proves us otherwise.
Yep. Yeah, why not? Absolutely. Great stuff. Delighted for you and the team. Well done. And yeah, I look forward to seeing what he does next.
Yeah, thanks very much, Tom.
My guest today is the Racing Post, Jonathan Harding. Jonathan, welcome along. And I'll put that question to you. Can this horse become a grade one staying chaser of the future? We might find out at Punchestown.
Yeah, morning, Tom. I think there's absolutely no reason to suggest that he can't mix it at the top level as a staying chaser. His performance at Fairy House was particularly impressive, I think, just because he jumped so fluently, but when he also did make those mistakes and perhaps lost a bit of momentum, he was able to pick up again. And the way he stayed on to the line, I mean, he's brave, he's game, he's good at his fences. Okay, he made a few mistakes, but you can just see natural improvement from him. And I think, you know, he is still a novice and there's a lot of, I think, improvement to come potentially. So yeah, there's absolutely no reason why he can't, but it's worth noting that it is obviously a very stacked division, particularly in Ireland with the likes of Factor File coming through. It's, you know, it's a good division to follow, I think, because it is so competitive. But I think he's going to be there or thereabouts.
Well, owner and breeder of the horse, Simon Minear, joins me now. And it was actually pointed out to me subsequent to the race that the horse was out of the Great Un Artiste, which, Simon, huge congratulations. And that factor, the fact that you've bred an Irish national winner, must be magic for you.
Well, it's a dream come true. You know, Un Artiste. Actually, Un Artiste is, apart from winning the Fred Winter back in 2012, it was her that she was responsible for our partnership with Isaac, because I saw Isaac the week after Un Artiste had won the Fred Winter in Singapore at Raffles Hotel, which is why all our homebreds have got the Raffles mnemonic. So she sort of brought us together in creating Double Green.
So there's often a horse at the start of something like this. And not only is she responsible for the Irish national winner, she is Double Green responsible. So she's ultra special.
She is, yeah. But I mean, she was in my sole ownership then. And then I had a business meeting with Isaac, who had been a very good friend of mine for since the sort of early 90s. And he said, what have you been up to? And I was telling him, it was literally the week after Cheltenham, about the Fred Winter. And he was just asking me question after question. And the more I went off the racing subject, so because I'm conscious that, you know, you can bore non-racing people so easily. Every time I went off the subject, he went back to racing. So, you know, it was after that lunch that we decided that we'd share a horse together.
Ah, and the rest is history. And now every great moment he thanks you for, and every disaster, because the two are never far apart, he blames you for.
That's right, Tom.
Right, so this horse, obviously, you know, started life in France, and then, I mean, since he's come to Tom, he's been virtually foot perfect.
I mean, in France, he won the, back in 2021, he won the Prix Ossipani, which is a sort of one of the named 3-year-old juvenile races in France. But then he sort of lost his way a little bit, and he didn't really take to chasing in France, because obviously chasing in France, you know, there are various obstacles, bullfinches, rivers. So it's sort of more like, a lot of the tracks are more like our cross-country tracks. So then at Double Green, we basically, we run horses in France, Ireland and England. And over the years, we've devised our own sort of matrix that measures a whole variety of parameters with our horses. And we thought that this would be a horse who had showed us potential, but would benefit from a new environment and a new style of racing, i.e. our steeplechasing. And then I'd got to know Tom. We were interested in a horse called Velvet Elvis that he ran in the Grand National last year. And I got to know Tom through discussing that, but eventually we couldn't really consummate a deal. So But I just thought that he was a very, very nice guy, very simple, very straightforward guy to deal with. And then going back to the Matrix, we were tracking his performance and runners and percentages, and we sort of identified him as a trainer who we should send a horse to.
So just this is interesting. By and large, the France is the starting point, and it's at what point they might transition over to the UK or now predominantly Ireland.
Well, the most of our horses are bred in France, so it makes sense to start them off in France. And now we don't really buy many form horses in France, so we're trying to create our own and build our own horses. So, as I say, all anything with the Raffles mnemonic is bred by us.
When was the last time you bought a point-to-point winner? Just out of interest. Doesn't happen.
The last time we bought a point-to-point winner was 2 weeks ago,
Okay,
so it
does
does happen because we look at we really. We try and source horses from different different sources. But I mean, fundamentally, I think where we're different to a lot of people is that we're value buyers. Because I mean, an expensive horse is just as prone to injury as a more reasonably priced horse. So we try to look for an angle and buy something that's sort of reasonably priced.
This horse, Intense Raffles, is are you leaving it to Tom? Are you sort of seeing how things fall before Punchestown? What would you like to do?
Well, we'll obviously see how he comes out of the race. Punchestown is a possibility, and that would really give us a measure of where he is. I mean, probably in the Grade One, I would assume Factor File would run, so that would be a very good benchmark for us to see where we stand.
And if I can ask you for your superstar update on El Fabiolo, obviously things did not go to plan at Cheltenham. Are we going to see the horse at Punchestown, as far as you know?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, he came out of Cheltenham. Obviously, he was a bit sore, so that was quite a bad mistake he'd made. There are a few niggly things that came to light, but nothing really substantive. So, at the moment, our plan is to run him at Punchestown again.
Okay, look forward to seeing him. Really appreciate the update on that. And yeah, well done again yesterday. You bred the Irish Grand National winner. So great stuff.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Tom.
Well, great day at Fairy House for brewing up a storm and collect connections. And Ollie Murphy joins me now, who, well, you must have been delighted with yesterday. Just looking back at this horse's career, he's been fairly phenomenal for you. You must be very proud of him.
Very proud, Tom. Just one thing I'm really disappointed in is I never won a Grade One with him. He came close in entry as a novice. But yeah, he's had a fantastic career, and hopefully he's not done with yet.
Yeah, listen, you know that it's still a possibility, isn't it? I guess that does linger as a disappointment because he's nigh on that quality, isn't he? Or has been.
He is, yeah, he is. And I've kind of thought the last 2 years going to entry, and I had the right chance to win the entry hurdle, but he's just been over the top by then. But listen, we're going to give entry a swerve this year and head to Sandown for the select hurdle last day of the season, which conditions should be ideal for him. But yeah, yesterday was fantastic, and I was, yes, certainly very proud.
When did the Fairy House plan get hitched?
I actually rang Gary O'Brien 3 weeks ago and said there's a serious lack of races for putting up a storm in England, and would he be competitive in that race at Fairy House? So yeah, about 3 weeks ago, obviously the National Spirit was cancelled this year, which is a shame. He was going back to win that for a third year. So yeah, 3 weeks ago, but yeah, no, magic day, and yeah, we were certainly welcomed with open arms by the Irish, and we had a fantastic day.
It must be nice for you to team up with Jack Kennedy again, given, well, you know, obviously given your time with Gordon, etc., when Jack was coming through the ranks.
Yeah, no, 100%. Obviously, Jack rode a big winner for me at Ascot at the start of my career, and yeah, obviously, I saw him come up through the ranks when being assistant for Gordon. I saw him have his first ride in Ballinrobe, I think it was, on a horse called Tagliatelle on the flat, and saw him flourish as a young man and as a rider. And yeah, listen, he's first class, isn't he? Obviously, Sean stayed in England to try and carry on his pursuit of trying to be champion jockey, and yeah, just kind of opened the door for Jack to ride him, and yeah, no, it was magic.
Okay, so it's a Bruin Swerve in Aintree. Have you got anything notable heading there?
I suppose Strong Leader, Thunder Rock and Go Dante now would be three horses that head there with a chance. So yeah, Thunder Rock's going to run the bowl. He's going to go there fresh after his win up in Kelso. Strong Leader running the 3 mile grade one. He's obviously been kept fresh now and back to a flat track. He's in very good form. And Go Dante off the back of winning the Imperial Cup, either running the boys race or the 2.5 mile handicap. So they're probably my three best chances to go there. And yeah, they're hopefully going to go there with three kind of good each way chances.
Just to come back to Thunder Rock, did last time tell you that he stays that distance? Were you not sure going into it? I remember Cheltenham the previous year. I think it was at the back of your mind you weren't convinced. You are now, obviously.
Yeah, I was a little bit apprehensive, to be honest, whether he would stay the trip, but we rode him accordingly and he saw it out really well. And listen, I think a flat track 3 miles around Aintree will suit him well, as long as it's not too testing. He'll probably have an entry in the 2.5 as well, but he's quite similar to Bring Up a Storm in a way. When he's good, he's very, very good, and hopefully he'll wake up on the right side of bed on the Friday of Aintree.
Lovely stuff. We look forward to seeing you up there. All the best. Cheers, Ollie.
Thanks, Tom.
And hold the front page then. Graded success for Britain in Ireland with Ollie Murphy's Brewing Up a Storm. Ultra consistent, really, that horse has been. And Ollie reflecting there on the fact that he's disappointed he's never won a grade one for him. You never know. He may still. Although it, you know, perhaps seems less likely than it was a few years ago. But he has been a tremendous horse for the yard.
Yeah, he has. I love this story. Really love this story because he's one of those horses that we just see rocking up all the time in those big races. He's been not so much knocking on the door, but hammering on it. He's not been the most consistent. He's always hinted at immense ability. And it was just great that he was able to put it all together. And I think it's hats off to Ollie Murphy for taking him over there and having a crack. You know, there's an awful lot of talk and head scratching and consternation about Irish trainers coming over and mopping up all the big races. So for him to actually take up that challenge, send him to Fairy House, and to get a result like that is just fantastic. And it's great to see an 11-year-old doing that and still having that level of enthusiasm. And it would be great if he went on and won a grade one as well.
Now, in that Rathbarran Glenview Studs hurdle, Brewing Up a Storm 5-1 shot beat Zarak the Brave, who was 5-6, obviously for Willie Mullins. Subsequently, in the McInerney Properties Ferry House Chase, the Grade 2 Journey With Me for Dara O'Keefe and Henry de Bromhead, won. St. Sam went off at 6-5 and was pulled up in the end. What I'm not getting at here is Willie Mullins' horses that didn't win. He obviously had a very good day on the Sunday with the graded contests. The Grade 2 went to Captain Cody, a 17-2 shot. Jay DeGrugy won the Honeysuckle Mares Novices Hurdle at 7-4 favourite. Mirazur West won the Novice Hurdle Grade 2. But what we didn't see was a load of odds-on shots going off and winning or not. Did we see enhanced competition at this meeting?
That, to me, is the crucial point. I think in that seemingly never-ending debate after Cheltenham, it was all about how do we limit the power of Willie Mullins. It's all about Willie Mullins having better horses. It's less an Irish domination. It's all about Mullins. And there's just this preoccupation that Mullins having so many winners was somehow off-putting to punters and to race girls as well. And it even got linked to attendances. It all got a little bit perhaps out of hand, because I think the actual issue that we stumble across is it doesn't really matter who trains the horses sometimes. What we don't want is odds-on shots trained by anybody. You know, we want competitive fields. We want good field sizes, but also in those top races where maybe there won't be as many runners, you want to see a little bit of variance in the horses that can win and the winning odds that are returning. And we got that at Fairy House. It was really encouraging. There was a good spread of connections involved. Of course, Willie Mullins had his winners because he's the best trainer in Britain and Ireland. That makes perfect sense. But like you say, to have a 5-1 shot winning a grade two, 4-1 shot in Journey With Me winning the following chase, it's encouraging. It was a competitive meeting, and more of the same, please, is all I can say.
Dubai World Cup winning trainer Bhupat Simar joins me on the line. And, well, the dust has settled now, Bhupat. We're a few days on from that magical evening for you, for your longtime friend Ty Gaucher, for Judmont Farms. How's life?
Thanks for having me, Tom. I still wake up in the morning and I pinch myself. It's still sinking in. It's unbelievable. I mean, I've been watching that race since the first time it ever ran, and never thought that I'll have a horse run in it. And now winning it is we're still on cloud nine.
I remember after he won the invitation race for the Godolphin Mile, and about halfway through the replay, it was somebody said in my ear, he could go for a Dubai World Cup. And I thought, well, you know, yeah, but he's just done that over a mile. That was sort of your sentiment as well. We'll chat to Judmont Farm. At what point did things start to swing towards a World Cup tilt?
You know, at Judmont, they are incredible to deal with, because they kind of left it to me that what do I think? And they gave me their suggestion. They said, look, the dam side, there's a lot of stamina in the dam side. You know, the dam is by Empire Maker, who won the Belmont. And then, you know, you go further down the dam side after that is Touch Gold, who won the Belmont. And then AP Indy, they all had won Belmont. So mile and a half races, and also the dam's half sister are a couple of grade one winners at mile and a quarter. So there was, you know, which obviously they know their pedigrees better than anybody. And, you know, this is what they said. And they said, look, if you feel, you know, then we're going to go for it.
Right, the future. When do you think we will see the horse on a race course again?
You know, I'm not very sure. It's their decision. So I think they will sit down, and in the next couple of days, you know, they're gonna sit down with the princes as well and decide what's going to be the next step. But there is a possibility that he'll stay and try and go for Saudi Cup and Dubai World Cup double, because it hasn't been done. There is a possibility, so I'm not sure.
Sure. And as far as America at the end of the year, and do the, well, look, the treble, the quadruple, I don't know. The obvious ports of call I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but the obvious ports of call for the horse, whose form ties in with the best of America at the back end of last season, you know, the classic, the Pegasus, Saudi, Dubai. Is America out of the equation?
You know, I will let them make that decision. He obviously came from America for a reason. He didn't run there for a while. So, you know, there has to be reason for that. And, you know, after all, I mean, we do have, you know, all of America comes to this side of the world as well, because, you know, between Dubai and Saudi, we have some of the highest prize money on this planet. So it does make sense as well that he's 6 years old, he's not getting any younger, and then go across the world, go over there and compete, and then come this side. So I'm not sure, but, you know, whatever decision they're going to make a good one.
And from a trainer's perspective, you know, he had a setback when he was trained in America. Does he have a fragility to him, or, you know, where you have him now, are you confident in his soundness going forward?
Yeah, for me, we've had a very, very smooth run with him. He came from Judmont Farm in America. So Garrett O'Rourke, who's the boss of American operations for Judmont, he called me and they said, look, he's been in a grass paddock. He's enjoyed some holiday for 2 months, and they put him in light training, just trotting, and sent him over in a really good condition, in a very good condition.
And the only thing about his performance is it sort of half made me forget what Tuz did, who was very good, but even ever so slightly overshadowed by a World Cup winner. How's Tuz, and what's the plan with him?
Tuz as well. There is a race that he can run in America on Kentucky Derby Day. There's $1 million sprint, and they contacted us from Churchill Downs. We're thinking about it. I mean, he's not getting any younger. I'm not sure if we want to take him all across the world and, you know, try and run in that race. Otherwise, we might just give him a well-deserved rest and then come back and try and do the same thing again.
As nights go, that's I guess, comfortably your best on a race course, right? I'm not missing anything. Not missing anything obvious.
Well, it has to be, because, you know, I've never won the Dubai World Cup before, so it has to be. It is. I mean, it's the pinnacle of my career, or the best 2 minutes of my life.
Great stuff. Thanks, Bhupat. All the best.
Thank you, Tom.
About Seymour there. So immediately after the race, you know, I think the feeling, Jonathan, with our team was great. We've got a Dubai trained horse who can go to America with his run style, with the quality he possesses, formerly trained in America, and cut it with the best of them over there. And now we're sort of, you know, back down to earth, not looking like he's going to go down that route. Which it's a shame. I, you know, they're not our horses, and I want to see him travel back to the States. I don't think it's necessarily going to happen.
No, it's the hope that kills, isn't it? We want to see those good horses, really good horses, sort of mixing it globally. He's beaten so many very, very good dirt horses there. So you'd think races like the Classic, like the Pegasus over in the US would be tailor-made for him. But at the same time, it'll be them having to travel over. There's plenty of targets in the Middle East for them. A certain Saudi Cup's worth a few quid as well. So you can understand it. But as a purely from a racing fan perspective, not having any stake in the horse, it is a little bit disappointing. Yeah, it would have been nice to see him travel a little bit.
Timeform Tuesday is upon us. That's what they're calling it, Dan Barber, in the Timeform ranks. What are you going to tell me about, Dan? Are we starting in Dubai?
Yes, that's the word on the streets as well. Time from Tuesday. Kids can't get enough of it. We're going to start, obviously, with Laurel River after that pretty magnificent performance in the Dubai World Cup on Saturday. So it was prudent to update. He's standing amongst the best horses around, and a handful that we'll list, a couple probably are outgoing now, and indeed Ace Impact was retired. But we gave Laurel River, you might say, a fairly conservative 129 for the Dubai World Cup performance, despite the fact it was the second widest margin in the race this century, beaten only by the 2009 version of the race. And it outshone as well the winning margin that Dubai Millennium put up back at the start of the century. But 129 slots him in. It's rather conservative because we'd like to see it again. I think that's the long and the short of it. There have been a few down the years, haven't they, who've put up blistering performances in Dubai, and maybe they haven't managed to translate it to slightly more conventional racing in terms of back in Europe. So we'll monitor Laurel River's form. It may go up, it may go down, but it slots him in behind the likes of Ace Impact, who's on his way out, of course. Equinox, still top of the shop on 136. And he's just behind the likes of Mostadaf and Verdani. He's level with Mostadaf and Verdani, and just behind Westover. So it was a serious performance, as anybody with a set of eyes could see. But one at the moment we just may be exercising a little bit of conservatism with.
I guess what makes him exciting and what sort of, you know, gives the numbers some substance, if you like, is that the second and the third were the first and the second from the Saudi Cup. The form would appear to be there. It's hard to expect both of those to have underperformed. And he did this trying a new distance for the first time. So it's not as if he'd been, you know, butting his head against a brick wall over the same distance and not quite achieving a performance like this. So, but I understand why, from a time form perspective, to put a serious figure or a worthy figure on it, on the visual, it needs to happen at least once again.
Yeah, well, it taps into what James Willoughby often said with the TRC global rankings, giving a bit of weight to repeated top-class performances rather than getting too hung up on one out of the ordinary performance. That was the great thing about Franco, where he could have real confidence in the rate, the 147 ratings that he was able to clock, because of the fact that he did it time and time again. And that's the test for Laurel River now, albeit, isn't it going to be slightly unconventional campaigning, and they're going to give him a bit of time off now? But if he comes back in the same form, dear me, he'll be a devastatingly difficult horse to beat.
And changing codes a little, we lost Limestone Lad this week. Put some historical figures on that horse in comparison to some nowadays.
Yeah, no surprise for anybody who knows my sensibilities. It was a real sort of hammer blow, but he'd lived an extremely full life. But my sensibilities do lie with National Hunt racing, and I just love digging into some of the numbers because I don't think well, I'm pretty confident. In fact, I'm certain that we will never see the likes of these numbers again. Now we've seen only in the last couple of days that the fragility of these top horses, Constitution Hill, it's sort of plagued the second half of a season that's likely to end with just one appearance on the track. And State Manor, who's put up as this horse who dances every dance and goes to all these Grade Ones and a 9-time Grade One winner. I mean, even he can't hold a candle to some of the exploits of Limestone. And I'll just dig through a few of them because every single one blows your mind when you compare it to the current climber. He retired at the age of 11. He ran 7 times in his final season, won 5 of them. In 1999-2000, he ran 12 times and won 8 of them. And he also ran 8 times in his penultimate season between November and April. That just will not happen again, certainly for a horse of that level of ability. He ran 47 times over hurdles in all. His total numbers at the end of his career, all codes included, was 35 wins from 65 starts. That included running in 8 bumpers to start his career. So they sent a warning shot early as to how this horse might be campaigned. He clocked a time form rating of 165 on 12 occasions. I mean, that's more than Constitution Hill has run. And he was ridden by such great jockeys as Carberry, Walsh, Geraghty, and even our much-loved colleague on Racing TV, Fran Berry, who rode him to finish third in a maiden at the Curragh back in 2002. He was out of the frame only twice in 53 runs over jumps, and he linked together some of the very great jumpers of modern times, form with Barracuda, the great French stayer, Iris's Gift, the great British stayer for Jonjo O'Neill, and that famous clash where he wore down Istabrak is one that will live long in my memory as well. And just as a final one, we talk about wide winning margins, thanks to Laurel River. 3-time Grade 2 winner Boss Doyle, he won that West Yorkshire hurdle at Wetherby twice and once ran up against Limestone Lad at Christmas in 1999 and was on the receiving end of a 56-length beating. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, Boss Doyle. A truly remarkable racehorse. The longevity, the toughness, the how genuine you must be to keep going back time and time again. And as I said at the start, the fact he ran 7 times in his final season and won 5 of them when he was approaching his teenage years sort of encapsulated a career that we will never see the like again. And to reflect back on those great memories as he passes in his early 30s, I thought was something that had to be done this weekend, Tom.
Hear, hear. Everything you've said, spot on, except referring to Fran Berry as a much loved colleague is frankly wide of the mark. Cheers, Dan. Well, it's Tuesday, so about time we went around the bloodstock world with our friends at Weatherby's. And today, Weatherby's send us to Andrew Spaulding and to Hedgeholm Stud. Hedgeholm have recently announced the new arrival of Landforce to their ranks. And Andrew joins me now to talk about this and plenty more. I should start with the obvious, Andrew. How are you? Not a quiet night, I hear.
Good morning, Tom. No, not a quiet night. We had a mare foal at 2:30 this morning. And like all those ones at that time of the morning, a little bit slow to get to its feet, but all well now.
That is good news. All is well.
Yep.
Go on, tell me about Landforce and the acquisition of this horse, why it's important to you and important to breeders in the north.
Well, it all came as a bit out of the blue, actually. I've supported Landforce since he retired to stud. I've sent 2 mares to him every year, and last year some of my clients sent mares to him. And he, as you know, he got off to a steady start at stud. He produced a few winners, but he hasn't come up with a top-class horse just yet. And back at the end of January, I got a phone call from Jake Warren, asking me if I'd be interested in standing him. And as I had one or two very nice horses by him, well, I've had some very nice horses by him over the years, I thought it'd be churlish not to, especially with the numbers he's got coming forward. He covered 130 last year. He was well into the hundreds in his first two seasons. And it was, as I say, it was out of the blue. I mean, obviously, a fourth season at stud for a horse is always a tricky time. So a change of scenery was probably what he needed, and change of environment. And just looking at him on the whole family have improved when they've turned three or older. And I can't see any reason why his stock won't do the same and expect plenty of winners this year from him.
So, I mean, he himself was a €350,000 yearling. Obviously, plenty of success on the race course. How would you assess his first season with runners last year?
I thought he did pretty well. He had a decent strike rate of winners to runners. The interesting thing was that they won over all sorts of distances, including, you know, a mile plus. And whilst he was a fairly speedy horse, as I said, you know, when you look at the pedigree, which I think is the great thing behind him, when you've got Magical and Rhododendron and Augustus Rodan and all those good staying horses, I think he should get them over all trips. If he'd had a black type winner, I think he'd still be down at Highclere.
Well, he had more individual winners than the likes of Advertised, Phoenix of Spain and City of Light. So I suppose individual winners, he's like most stallions like him, is looking for that star to emerge through the ranks.
Yeah. And I mean, he's kicked off this year with winners already. He's had quite a few good winners abroad. But let's just hope that something like Siri Drenks or one of his other horses comes up and picks up some black type fairly quickly.
Okay, so tell me about the broaden out to Hedgeholm itself. How would you as a stud market yourself?
Well, we've been going for 40 years now, and I set off way back in the instance with one of Sir Mark Prescott's good old horses, Marching On. And ever since then, believe it or not, I've managed to get a fresh face every year, fresh stallion every year, which the way the industry's changed so much. In the first instance, it kept the regular clients coming back because they had a new horse. And to be honest, in the last few years, the industry has changed so much with walking in mares and big books that it's now a matter of just finding a horse that will pick up the mares that owners aren't spending fortunes on and putting in the wagon to go south with to cover them.
So I suppose, Andrew, forgive me, you wouldn't, you know, you're not finding a new stallion each year for the sake of it, because you're, you know, you still want the right stallion. Has that been hard to maintain over the years, a new stallion each year?
It has. It's been tricky sometimes. In the last 5 years, I had support from Mali Albasti with the likes of a horse called Intrinsic and Portamento. And more recently, I've had Burattino, who just never seems to stop throwing winners. But he was for Godolphin. But there just wasn't the demand for horses that, you know, there isn't the demand that there used to be up in the north, anyhow.
So the horse we've touched upon and started with, he is the Landforce, the only stallion you're now standing, is that right?
He is, yeah. I mean, I've normally had two or three, but I just can't see the point in having horses that are covering 10 or 15 mares.
Yes.
They don't pay their way. They don't hit the highlights. So you've got to have a horse that you hopefully will get a reasonable size book to.
What is the sort of size book that you require, or does it simply just depend on the stallion?
It really depends on the stallion, but I mean, in the ideal world, I'd like a horse that's covering realistically 30 plus mares a year, which I know is a far cry from the the big boys now who have three figures in mind, or the horse, you know, doesn't get a chance.
You've had loads of success in the past. You particularly had a lot of northern success. You reared the only 2-year-old to ever win the Weatherby Super Sprint, the Redgar Gold Trophy, for example, Blue Iris. Well, yep. Again, is that still achievable now, do you think, or is it getting tougher? Is the landscape changing?
The landscape, to my way of thinking, the landscape's changing. The breeding industry now is going down two different routes, in my view. We've got the commercial, what I call the commodity trading route, which is the one that's attracting the big books to the stallions so people can sell them as foals and the pin hookers can turn over money with yearlings and two-year-olds. And then you've got the nucleus of breeders who still breed to race, not the huge private breeders, but the smaller breeders who just like to have a horse in training and love nothing more than a homebred horse in training. And, you know, some of those breeders have got mares good enough that you can achieve, you know, a good win every now and again. It's what keeps the industry bubbling along.
Mm. So you have Landforce now. The progeny have consistently seen six-figure yearling sales. If there are any breeders up there in the north who have a mare, this stallion is the, or it could be the right one for their mares to visit.
It could be. I mean, if he gets the winners this year, he'll come back into fashion. His I'll be honest, his foal sales last year were disappointing because of the trend of the new era. A horse falls out of favour if he hasn't got black type winners, but it doesn't stop them producing winners, and it doesn't stop them producing really nice solid horses that will run races.
Great stuff. Listen, we wish you all the best, in particular with Landforce, and thanks for your time. I hope you have a quieter night this evening.
Yep, and you, Tom. Thank you very much.
Jonathan Harding, what are you looking forward to this weekend? It's sort of domestically quiet.
Yeah, it is domestically quiet. We've got the Go North weekend, that three-day fixture at Musselburgh on Friday. Just checking, yeah, Musselburgh on Friday, Kelso Saturday, and Carlisle on Sunday. That's a great series, good prize money for those horses that maybe are just a little bit short of the top level. Plenty of interest there in the sense of some previous winners always come back for more, and there's always some good stories to come out of that. I'm looking forward to Ile Francais looking further afield. He's going to make his return in France on Saturday, and that is going to be at Auteuil in the Prix Murat before probably going on to the Grand Steep to Paris on the 19th of May. Clearly, we all remember his performance at Kempton. It's one of those where, again, very similar to the Dubai World Cup winner. We'd have loved to have seen him at a Cheltenham, at an Aintree, but they're just taking their time with him. Seriously talented horse, and he looks tailor-made for a King George next season as a sort of big target. But it'll be interesting to see him back in action on Saturday.
Good. Thanks for alerting me to that. I will. I'll try and get Noel George or Amanda Zetterham on the podcast tomorrow. I appreciate your newsworthy input. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Yeah. What have you got tip-wise? Maybe I'll be thanking you for a winner as well.
Well, fingers crossed, yeah. Glorious Angel in the 3:15 at Pontefract have landed on for Grant Chua. Loves heavy ground and still looks to be well handicapped to me. It's a competitive enough race, but I just think that Glorious Angel has a class edge there, and there's still a bit of room in that mark.
Jonathan, thanks very much. Thanks to everyone for tuning in yet again. And it will be me back with you tomorrow, which will be Wednesday, the 3rd of April. But that was Tuesday, done and dusted. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.